Are you ready? Are you ready to take massive action towards building a life and lifestyle that rewards you with a fit body, endless supplies of mental and physical energy, and total freedom from guilt around food and exercise? This is Cut the Fat Podcast. Hey everybody, it's Dr. Ray Hynes, joined here with Blythe Ahlberg. Hey Blythe.
Hello, hello, Dr. Ray. How's it going?
Awesome, awesome. I'm excited that we're doing a mailbag today, right?
Yeah, you know, we get a lot of questions through our Cut the Fat Facebook page. And every once in a while, we get a nice collection. And I like to pick out some of our favorites and go through and answer those. So that's what we will be doing today.
Excellent. Let's go ahead and get started. Jump in.
Okay. All righty. Well, the first one is a calorie question from Katie. And I'm actually going to read the question because I think there's quite a bit of information here. And I don't want to sum it up and skip over anything. So it says, I am a longtime listener. I had a question, please. I recently started losing weight again. I'm 5'3" and I'm just going to say over 200 pounds. She is an overeater. The problem, excuse me, is that I'm not getting enough calories per day. I average between 9 and 1100. My body feels full when I eat, and I'm eating lots of fruits and vegetables and less meat or dairy. I work out for an hour a day, half cardio, running, jogging, or the elliptical, and half body weight slash strength training. I have plenty of energy. I'm sleeping 7 to 8 hours a night. I feel like I should be eating more, but I'm just not that hungry. And when I do, I feel full and uncomfortable. So it sounds like she might be kind of force feeding on occasion. I thought things might balance out, but it's been a month. So my question is it more important to eat 1200 plus calories a day, or should I listen to my body? And this question comes from Katie. And do you want to respond to that first, Ray?
Yeah, I'll give you kind of my take on it, and then you you kind of jump in with your take if it's different.
Okay.
So the way I approach this is we focus first on the food itself. I just did a blog post on this big study that was done that had a lot of experts kind of on the edge, right? It was this big study that it was an $8 million study where they went in and they wanted to test which was better, a low-carb diet or a low-fat diet. And we've discussed this in the past. Mm-hmm. The study ultimately went through and came out the other side with the finding that it didn't matter if people followed a low-carb diet or a low-fat diet. They all lost about the same amount of weight. The low-carb program lost about 13 pounds during the course of the study. The low-fat program lost about 12 pounds throughout the course of the study. So no significant difference between the two groups. Well, all of a sudden, you start seeing all of these headlines. It doesn't matter what type of diet you follow as long as it's low calorie.
Okay.
Here was what was interesting about that study. It was different in the sense that the researchers went into the study not accepting the fact that all calories are created equal. And during the study, they counseled people, and they really impressed upon them to focus on real food. So they didn't want people just going out and buying low-fat donuts or low-carb protein bars. They wanted people, and they impressed upon people that they wanted them to eat real food, proteins, meats, vegetables, fruits. They didn't want them to go out and get, you know, low-carb or low-fat TV dinners and things like that. They wanted them to really have actual food. And that, to me, is the finding. And in fact, that's what the researchers focused on. They said it doesn't really matter if you go low carb or low fat as long as you are eating real food.
Right.
And what was interesting about the study was they did not tell people to focus on or to count calories or to lower calories or to increase exercise. They just said stick to the government recommendations for exercise. They didn't tell them to lower it by 500 calories or anything like that. They said eat as much as you want as long as it fills you up.
Okay.
And as long as it's real food. And they all lost weight regardless of which diet you were on. Now, well, here's another interesting point about this study. They went through and they tested their genetics. They wanted to find out if somebody had genes for storing fat or for not dealing with carbs very well, would it make a difference? It didn't make a difference. Whether people had genetics for insulin resistance or not, or if they had issues with dealing with fat in the diet or not, it didn't seem to matter as long as people consumed real food.
Okay.
So in this case, in this email, basically she's saying, I'm eating a bunch of real food. Mm-hmm. I'm only getting to this number of calories, and I don't know if this is right. Should I add more calories?
Right.
My answer to that is if you are eating real food and you are satiated by the food that you're eating, then that is awesome. Just continue to do that. Are there ways that you could tweak it to make it better, adding a little bit more protein into the mix? Probably. I would also suggest that you not focus so much on the cardio. I would almost drop the cardio out entirely. Focus maybe on a 15-minute hardcore high-intensity interval training a few times a week. Focus on the resistance training, but let go of the standard cardio, the running, the jogging, the elliptical, because I think it's unnecessary and it's probably going to drain you of that necessary energy that your body needs to in order to keep the metabolism healthy. What do you think?
Right. Well, I was going to say exactly that, except I think I was going to take it a step further. So I would say, Katie, do the same thing. Eliminate the just the calorie burning exercise, which is the cardio, but do something that is going to target hitting your body fat and eliminating some of the body fat. So the 15 minutes of really hardcore high intensity interval training, or, you know, doing some sprints or something like that. I love the fact that she's eating plenty of whole foods, lots of fruits and veggies. That would be one of the first things I recommend. And I would say, don't even pay attention to the calories right now. However, at the beginning of the email, she says that she has just recently started losing weight again. So what she is doing is working. And if at some point, which it will happen, when you stop losing, Katie, it'll be important to implement something different. And since your calories are already on the lower side, I would say go maybe 100 or 200 calories for 3 or 4 weeks, bump it up a little bit, fluff up your diet a little bit in the first couple of meals during the day. So don't add 200 or 300 calories to just your dinner. You know, add maybe 100 calories to your breakfast and another 100 calories to your lunch or an afternoon snack, and see if you start dropping again. If you do, your body is utilizing those calories. If you don't, then you might want to rein it back a little bit and see if you start losing again. So that's one of the little tweaks that you could at least start with.
Right. And there's a lot of good stuff, I think, in this question. Like, as you mentioned, she is losing weight. She is burning fat. So if she continues to do that, then just continue to rinse and repeat. When things stabilize, then that's when you'd make a little bit of a shift or a change. Now, the cardio, throw it out. I honestly think that, especially at her caloric intake, I think the cardio is going to do more harm than good. But 15-minute hardcore high-intensity interval training a few times a week. Keep doing the resistance training, because the resistance training doesn't do a lot as far as calorie burn per se, but it will keep your lean tissue around so that as you lose fat, you won't also be simultaneously losing muscle. Everything else is looking really good. You're not hungry. You're sleeping plenty. Hopefully you're not stressing too much. One other thing we didn't discuss is throwing extra water into the mix. This can also help to keep your metabolism burning, to make sure that you're not dehydrating your system, and could also help keep you burning fat for a longer period of time before you hit that dreaded plateau.
Perfect. I think that's a great answer. She's got something to go with there. Okay, so the next question is a question for a friend. So Helen wrote in and gave us tons of kudos, big pat on the back. She really loves the podcast. And then at the end of the email, she says, I do have a question for a friend, though. In my excitement, I've been telling her all about what I've been learning and the importance of balanced hormones for weight loss. She has PCOS, and I guess all the women in her immediate family do as well. Is there any specific/special advice to help in weight loss for someone who is coping with this? You guys are great. Thank you so much, Helen.
PCOS, polycystic ovary syndrome, is a very, very difficult problem to have and with weight loss, because it can literally stop weight loss in its tracks. I've seen people try to do everything right and still have great difficulty losing weight. So oftentimes you will have to rely on some sort of medical intervention to help at least improve the circumstances enough to get you to the point where you can start burning fat again and to get healthy in general. So with PCOS, the primary issue is insulin resistance. That insulin resistance causes a lot of the issues that throw the hormones out of balance, cause you to produce more of the androgens, the things like testosterone, and that's one of the hallmarks of PCOS is they'll look at your blood test to evaluate where your testosterone levels are. If they are coming back really high, then that is one of the indicators that you are suffering with this situation.
Okay.
So the approach that we would recommend in her case would be, number one, get a full workup. If you can find a holistic-minded doctor, somebody who's very well-schooled in bioidentical hormone replacement therapy, I would have them do a workup on you and see what they find. They may have some good recommendations as well. Number two, you may need to be on something like metformin. Metformin is a medication that is used for diabetes and insulin resistance. It is the best out of the bunch. There's evidence it has anti-aging qualities about it. In fact, it's being tested as an anti-aging medicine. Generally, people tolerate it very well. Biggest complaint is loose bowels. That can be problematic for some people who take the medication. If you are not on metformin, you can try an over-the-counter nutritional supplement that has similar effects. It activates the same pathway. It's called berberine, spelled B-E-R-B-E-R-I-N-E.
Okay.
And that's 500 milligrams with each meal, three times a day. I also recommend something called myo-inositol. Myo-inositol is another supplement that's been specifically studied with PCOS, very effective for that. I would incorporate that along with either berberine or metformin if she so has that as a prescription.
Okay.
And then all the other things that we talk about, you'll keep focusing on eating real food, number one. Don't try to starve yourself. Starving yourself is only going to make PCOS worse. So don't try to starve yourself. The exercise recommendations are the same. Focus on things that really sensitize the body to insulin. We talked about this in the previous podcast episode, which is walking is going to be probably one of your best activities. I don't know that I would do a really intense resistance training program until after the testosterone levels are normalized. Sometimes that can make that situation worse. So I would focus more on restorative exercises, maybe short bouts of high intensity interval training and long bouts of walking as a way of helping to improve your sensitivity as you get all these other stuff under control.
Okay. That is a very thorough answer. From my side, I would say be really, really careful with the sugars that you're eating,
yes.
Not getting in a lot of sugars. And then I would, you're going to have to seek out some sort of medical support to find out if, in fact, you do have PCOS and if it runs in your family, how what you can do about it, depending on the stage that you're at.
Right. And these type of hormonal imbalances also have a mixed bag, too. Sometimes you'll see thyroid issues, hypothyroid come into play with PCOS. So you got to keep an eye on that as well.
Yes. Okay, good. That was a great answer for that one. So Helen, thanks for asking for your friend. Number three, Philip writes, how much carbs is too little? How many carbs are too little? And I actually do have a direct answer for this. It's a very straightforward, simple question that he asked, but there's a rather lengthy answer. Everyone is different. Philip, I like to see what people are currently doing, and if it's working for them, fantastic. I need to know how they feel, if they're low on energy. If you're somebody who gets in, let's just say, including all of your vegetables and fruits, you're getting in 50 grams of carbohydrates a day, and you feel great. Well, then I would say that's probably about as low as you want to go. Our brains need carbohydrates to operate and be functional, and as long as you're getting in enough fiber, I think 50 would be probably the minimum that I would tell somebody to go to if, in fact, you're really trying to watch your carbohydrates. And obviously, make sure that those are good whole food carbohydrates and they're not coming from sugars, you know, Skittles or M&Ms or something.
Absolutely. And, I think that's a good answer. You know, with carb intake, again, with this study, going back to this original study, I'm so happy mm-hmm. that I just kind of reviewed that on a blog post. I wasn't even expecting to utilize it during the podcast, but you know, in that study, even though they said it was low carb, it really wasn't low carb. It was controlled carb for sure, but it wasn't low carb in a sense of dropping down to 50 to 75 grams of carbs per day, like you see in a lot of really true low carb or ketogenic type programs.
Right.
But you know, you've got to listen to your body, especially when we're talking about long-term weight loss. If you're talking short-term, like doing a carb cleanse where you're going really low on carbs down to, let's say, the 25 to 50 gram mm-hmm. range just to burn off some extra fat, and then you're going to slowly increase the carb intake up until what we call your tipping point, your carb tipping point, whereas that point in which you consume carbs that then ultimately causes a negative consequence to your weight loss,
right.
then that's great, you know. But if we're talking long term, really we're focusing on, once again, eating real food, keeping your refined carbs down. When you eat real food, the total carbs have a tendency to take care of themselves, right?
Right. Yes,
when
absolutely.
You're eating lots of fruits and vegetables as your primary source of 80% of your intake. The carbs, it's hard to eat too many carbs in that sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It actually literally becomes difficult to fit too many in.
Right. And by the way, in that study, they also did not say you can't eat starchy carbs like pasta and rice and things like that. They said you can eat them. Just eat the lower glycemic, more natural versions of those. Stay away from the whites. Stick to the browns. And what happened is, I think people are smart enough and the systems, the natural hormone systems, balance enough where you're not going haywire with the number of carbs that you're consuming in those situations.
Right. You don't feel like you're being so deprived that you binge.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. Okay. So the next one is from Kirill, I think is how you pronounce it. And he is from Ontario, Canada. And he is asking about water consumption. Hi, I have a question. Sometimes on a busy day, it's often hard to track the amount of water I consume. Is the urine color a good and reliable indication for the body hydration in such cases? I'm not talking about a special case like someone who's got kidney disease or being on medications that could change the color of your urine. And it says, thanks, Kirill. I believe that water can be a good indicator. In fact, I use that when asking my children if they've had enough water to drink, believe it or not. You know, I will have I have two boys. A lot of times they don't flush the toilet, if I'm going to be honest here. Okay. And I'm like, hey, did you not drink your water at lunch today? You know, I usually pack them a full water bottle or a thermos, and they bring it home. So that's one of my tricks, is I don't pack a throwaway water bottle, something that's recyclable. I pack them a thermos so it gets returned home, and I can monitor the amount of water they drink, because especially with kids playing sports, it's spring season right now, and it's really important to make sure that they stay hydrated. And of course, ourselves as adults too, it is equally important, but it's a little more tricky to monitor your children. And I do use urine color as an indicator. Yes. For myself, I find that my pee is almost always clear, but that's because I'm really good at staying hydrated. What do you suggest, Ray?
I think it's fine. I mean, as long as you're reaching the minimal 2-liter mark and you're using that as an indicator, that's just fine, I would say. You know, water is one of those ones where there isn't a whole lot of research to go on as to what is the appropriate amount. You know, you hear eight ounce glasses. There's no real data to support that as a recommendation. Generally, we say up to a gallon a day, depending upon how much activity and sweat you have during the day. If you work out a lot and you are a sweater, you know, like I can, you know, maybe this is all TMI with you and your pee and me and my sweat, but you know, I'm a sweater. So if I when I'm working out, I will lose a lot of weight in fluid that way. And so, you know, I've got to drink more than what most people who do not sweat would have to drink. So we generally say, I like to say 2-2.5 liters would be kind of the mark for most days. And then if you can do so, and it doesn't interfere with your life in such a way where you just give up on the whole activity of drinking water altogether, you could take it all the way up to, let's say, 80 ounces for most people and be quite healthy and keep things running pretty well that way.
Yeah. And I, you know, I usually recommend 100 ounces for people who really are getting into the interval training and really, you know, hitting the weights hard just for that reason. You know, maybe the explanation of why would help those people understand. But, you know, 80 to 100 ounces, I think for most people should do it.
Right.
That's a great question, though, because you're right. There isn't a whole lot of research. I think the 64 ounces, the 8 8-ounce glasses of water a day is something doable because most of us are at work for 8 hours a day or, you know, up and active for at least 8 hours a day. And having one glass of water during those hours is something that's doable for everyone. I actually think that's where that recommendation came from. I could be wrong.
Right.
But
I would say, you know, in the Cut the Fat Coaching Club, when we're coaching people, if we get people up to 80 ounces of water, I think you and I are both pretty happy.
Oh, yeah.
For me,
for sure.
Sometimes it's tough to get people to drink that much because, you know, some people have to go to the bathroom so often, they end up just, you know, letting go of the whole habit altogether. So, you know, we say 80 ounces, if you can do it, you're ahead of the game. If that's too much, just take it back some. You know, if you feel like you're drowning in water at that level, then just take it back
just
some.
Just dial it back.
Yeah, if you're 90 pounds and you don't need to necessarily drink a gallon of water. If you're, you know, if you're very sedentary and you're sitting at a desk all day long, maybe you don't need quite that much, you know, but if you are active, if you are doing things kind of the right way and getting lots of physical activity and you're out and about and you're doing things and you're staying active during the day, you might need more than the standard 8 times 8, the 8 glasses, 8 ounces per day.
I generally think also, and not to beat a dead horse, but I feel like if you're getting in enough water, you're going to be able to rely on your body's natural need for water. So if you keep a water bottle with you on you at all times, drink when you're thirsty too.
Absolutely.
You know, if you've already reached that initial threshold. Okay. Next question is from Melanie. She's asking about long-term juicing. Now, you and I will probably agree here on this. I'm interested to hear what you say. So here's her question. Hi, guys. I'm loving the latest podcast and started listening to the older ones again. I was hoping to get your take on juicing. It seems since the documentary, Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead, that juicing has just become a craze. It sounds fantastic, and I'm loving the juices I'm putting together. But I'm wondering what your take is on these long-term juicing diets are. Thank you for all you do, Melanie. What are your thoughts on long-term juicing?
Well, I would say I'm not a fan. I just don't think it's sustainable for 99 out of 100 people. And if it's not something you can do every day, it's probably not going to result in lasting results for people. Now, that's not to say that there aren't people like the person who did that documentary who have successfully used that as a tool and continue to do so. I'm sure there are people out there who just do juice fasting and it's wonderful and they lose lots of weight and they maintain that weight. But for the most part, people are not going to maintain that for an extended period of time. What's your take?
Right. Okay. So my take is documentaries usually have a really good way of influencing you to kind of believe in whatever it is that you're watching because, well, that's kind of their job. That's what documentaries are made for typically. So I have actually seen that. I think I've probably watched it twice. And, you know, I've always thought about juicing, but here's my take on it. If you are someone who is that obese and you're doing it for weight loss specifically, like you said, it probably will work. But if it's not something that you're going to do, and I think you'll feel great getting all the nutrients and the vitamins and cutting out some of the food that's been weighing you down and you start feeling light. But you have to remember that these people also started walking. They upped their water intake. They started paying attention to their food. It wasn't just the juicing that led to the results. That being said, I think that people who have difficulty getting in lots of fruits and vegetables, if you have like a Nutribullet or something where you keep the fiber in the juice, I would suggest doing that if you're someone who has difficulty getting in a variety of fruits and vegetables. You know, I might juice a couple of times a week just because, you know, I want to do something different. It's not specifically for weight loss. So juicing as a diet long term, I would say no. But juicing for other purposes, I would say yes.
Yeah, if you're using it as like
supplemental.
A fast, that's, you know, and you're doing that for health purposes, yeah, that's great. Do it.
Yeah.
But just don't use it as a long term day in, day out kind of program.
Right, tool for weight loss. Because once you stop doing that, which is inevitable, it will come at some point in time. You're not going to juice until you're 100, probably. you know, things will change, and you're very likely to gain some of that weight back.
Awesome.
Okay, so the next question comes from Sophie. And Sophie, this is a great question. I really, really like this. Hi, guys. I'm just wanting to know if you would consider netball, which is the UK's version of like basketball, or touch football as a HIIT workout. I play a lot of sports, but I'm considering cutting back if it's not helpful with fat loss. Thanks, Sophie. Great question. Sophie, my answer to this would be, if these are things that you regularly do, if you play basketball netball three or four days a week, touch football a couple of days on the weekend, and you're not losing weight, you're not getting any closer to your goal, I would say that those would be labeled as activities for you. It's something your body has already adapted to. It's something that's already incorporated into your plan. So you're going to have to turn it up a notch. You maybe could choose a different activity. So your body, you know, maybe, I don't know, racquetball or pickleball or something that's a little different, and see what that does. If you prefer doing an activity over, let's just say a workout, you know, a high intensity interval training type of workout. So changing up what you're doing should start you getting results again. But if what you're doing right now isn't leading you closer towards your goal, I'm going to say that we'll label those as activities for you. Now, if we take someone sedentary and we have them playing netball 3 days a week, yeah, that's probably going to help dip into their fat stores and help them start moving them in the right direction. So this is where things become kind of tricky, and fat loss is really individualized. We all lead different lifestyles, and that's everyone's starting point is different.
It is. So for me, you know, if you really enjoy the activity, if you really enjoy the netball or the touch football, then by all means, keep doing it. And even if it doesn't help you lose weight per se, but you enjoy it, don't stop it. We all get 24 hours in a day. You know, 8 of that, we're probably sleeping. The rest, we get to decide what we do with it. And if you can either fill it with sedentary things or you can fill it with active things. So I would put this in the realm of pleasurable activities that's not going to have a negative impact on your ability to lose weight. Is it necessarily going to help you achieve your weight loss goals? Maybe, maybe not. It certainly can hurt because it's a pleasurable activity. It's not sending necessarily stress signals to the body. Is it high intensity interval training? Probably doesn't reach that level. And I'll tell you why. For me, high-intensity interval training, in order to call it real high-intensity interval training, you have to send emergency signals to the body. And to achieve that, you have to work at a level that really causes a real strong burn in the muscle because you're really pushed into the anaerobic zone. And for the most part, those sports will likely not allow you to reach that level. They're more like cardio than they are high-intensity interval training.
Right.
And so I wouldn't call them high-intensity interval training. I'd call them pleasurable activities. And if you do really enjoy them, keep doing them. Don't stop them, even if it's not helping you to achieve your weight loss goals. Now, you may have to implement some high-intensity interval training on days when you're not playing, or you may have to implement some resistance training on those days to really send the signals that we want to send. But you've also got to keep in mind that a lot of this battle is in the kitchen. It's not necessarily on the field or in the gym.
Right. And, you know, doing those pleasurable activities could definitely be helping with where you're at right now. You know, a lot of times indirectly helping with your efforts. So they might keep your stress levels down. They might help you sleep better at night. Doing these things are something I would certainly not give up. And I just wanted to, you know, give a little backup to that piece because I think that's really important for her to get out of this.
And they're healthy things to do. They're fun things to do. And that has a positive impact on both the body and the mind. And I will point out that although our exercise in general has little impact for most people on actually helping them to lose weight, it has a significant impact on your ability to maintain that weight loss once you achieve it. So that's what the research is pretty unequivocal on, that even though it may not help you to burn fat necessarily during the weight loss phase, it absolutely will help you prevent that weight regain after the fact. So you definitely want to incorporate these types of activities into your lifestyle, whether they have a positive impact on your ability to lose weight or not.
Right. Right. Okay. Good one. Cool. Next question is from Brandon. It's about bulletproof coffee. And I know that there are probably a lot of you out there who have heard about David Asprey. He's the author of The Bulletproof Diet. Came out several years ago. But there have been a few follow-ups to that. This particular question is about the coffee. Brandon says, what's your take on bulletproof coffee? Also wondering about whether I can drink coffee during an intermittent fast. I figure drinking coffee with added cream or sugar, even in small amounts, would not constitute a fast, but I'm hoping for your approval, Brandon. So for those of you who don't know what the bulletproof coffee recipe is, it's 2.5 heaping teaspoon or tablespoons of ground bulletproof coffee beans. I know a lot of people just supplement that for whatever coffee beans they regularly use. 1 teaspoon to 2 tablespoons of brain octane oil, and then 1 to 2 tablespoons of grass-fed unsalted or butter or grass-fed ghee. And basically you throw it all in a blender, blend it up, makes kind of like a latte looking type of drink with some foam on top, and you drink that. And the idea behind this is to help you through a morning fast, and it's also supposed to help with allergies and a few other things, if I understand correctly.
So it is a basically a high fat, low sugar, low starch or low carb type coffee drink. The bulletproof coffee itself is supposed to be superior to other forms of coffee because free from mycotoxins or fungal toxins that may or may not be found in coffee. I've seen conflicting data on this. I personally don't worry about the mycotoxins in coffee. The research to date did not use bulletproof coffee. It used regular coffee, and they have shown benefits in diabetes prevention, Parkinson's, and other health conditions. I've seen no evidence that drinking regular coffee has any negative consequence to the health for the majority of people who are not necessarily caffeine sensitive. So if you're caffeine sensitive, it's not a good plan to do that kind of thing because, those people have a tendency to be a little bit more prone towards heart palpitations and things like that, blood pressure effects of caffeine and other things. But if you generally tolerate caffeine pretty well, I wouldn't, I would just choose a good fair trade organic coffee that isn't $20 a bag or whatever they charge at Bulletproof Coffee. As far as the high octane oil, that's basically what? MCT oil. It's medium chain triglycerides.
Right. Coconut oil is extra virgin coconut oil is what people typically use.
Right. And you can actually get MCT oil. The majority of research to date used MCT, which is not necessarily the same as coconut oil. It's often sourced from coconut oil, but it's not the same as coconut oil. It's actually a little bit different and a little bit better for weight loss purposes. I think there's nothing wrong with using a recipe like that. I don't know how I feel about just adding oil and butter into coffee. Myself, if I was using those things like MCT or butter oil, I would use it in replacement of other oils that I'm already consuming in the diet.
Right.
I would go out of my way to add
and putting
more
it in
of
your coffee.
In. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you on that. I don't think that there's been any, in my opinion, as far as weight loss goes, I don't think that there's been a whole lot of research done to support the importance of doing that. If it's something that you enjoy doing, then I would say I have no problem with it.
Right. And to the question on the intermittent fasting, black coffee is generally just fine. If you're going to do black coffee, it won't negatively impact the fasting. There are some who believe adding the MCT oil to the mix or the butter oil won't have a negative effect either, that in fact it might help to stimulate a more rapid decline into the ketosis. So I don't know how much of that I would incorporate. For me, if I'm doing anything, it's black coffee on a fasting day.
Okay. Yeah. And that's what I would recommend as well. So thanks for your question, Brandon. Okay. So we have one more question here. Actually, we've got two more. One from Katie, and she's asking about a documentary. I have heard a lot of the negative feed. I have heard a lot of negative feedback on What the Health. It's a documentary that I've just recently watched as well, again. But then someone very close to me, who has been a lifelong fitness / health addict, seems to think it is an amazing, groundbreaking documentary. I'm fascinated by the polar opposite reactions and would love to hear your thoughts. Katie. Katie, like I've said in the answer a little bit earlier about the juicing, the fat, sick, and nearly dead documentary. Watching these documentaries, you really have to go in with a strong mind and grab the golden nuggets. You know, we're each individuals and we're allowed to pay attention to whatever in our life we feel benefits us or ails us. And I think that sometimes watching documentaries like this, I know for me in the past, I have, you know, gone off meat for a few months just because I watched something like that. And it's not necessarily about the quality of the meat. It's more about the animals and things like that that bother me. But then I always kind of end up coming back to my regular life. So you have to do what fits in your lifestyle. Now, I have no arguments with finding a local farm and purchasing better quality meats or eggs that are fresh off the farm, or, you know, doing things to support your local farmers and suppliers for dairy and meats and things like this. I think that it's really important. Actually, it's an important step a lot of people could be taking to improve their health. So, you know, having grass-fed beef and things like that. And I know you agree with that, Dr. Ray. But as far as using that as your new Bible, I would suggest that you do a well-rounded research for yourself. So what you end up acting on is, if you do end up making changes to your lifestyle, what you are acting on is something that you have decided to do because it's going to benefit your life.
You can hear the steam in Bly's brain as she's thinking it through, because that is how confusing all of this really is. I haven't watched a lot of these documentaries, but I've watched enough to know that at the end of the documentary, you almost want to always shift your opinion to what it is they're trying to sell you.
Why they made the documentary.
That's right. The evidence, the amount of evidence that they provide, and you know, there is a book that's written by a lawyer that is very famous, and I think the title is How to Lie Using Statistics. And basically, as Mark Twain says, you can torture statistics long enough to get them to say whatever it is you want them to say.
Right.
And unfortunately, in these documentaries, the person goes in with a set mindset that this is what they're out to prove, and they prove it in a very compelling way. Like, mm-hmm. I could watch two totally different documentaries, one talking that eating nothing but meat is the way to go. At the end of that documentary, think eating meat is the way to go. And then 10 minutes later, watch a documentary that vegetables, only eat vegetables, everything else is going to kill you. And at the end of that documentary, I want to scream from the mountaintops, only eat vegetables, meat is going to kill you. And that's why it's so difficult to work through these, because there is evidence on both sides.
Right.
Here's how I kind of meld that all together. Number one. If it makes you feel good, if it makes you feel energetic, it's probably right for your body. Everybody's different in how their body responds to various things. If eating meat makes you drag, you probably should try not eating meat. If eating nothing but vegetation makes you drag, you probably should incorporate some meat and protein into the mix. Mm-hmm. I think and I meet these people in the office often who come in and think that I've got to go vegetarian because that's the only way I'm going to get healthy. And they look far less healthy than when they weren't vegetarian. And they mm-hmm. resist that change because they think they have seen all this evidence that suggests vegetation is the way to go. I had the opportunity to interview Dr. Campbell, who wrote the book, The China Study. And, you know, he makes some compelling arguments into the mix, but unfortunately, the data that they have is not all inclusive. And you never really know if it's the vegetation, the consumption of vegetation, and the avoidance of meat that causes the benefit, or mm-hmm. if it's simply the fact that they're eating lots of raw vegetables that provides the majority of the benefit, and the meat is an innocent bystander. So for me, I believe that if you consume meat, you should really eat lots and lots of vegetation, real, mm-hmm. natural fruits and vegetables, in order to counteract any negative effects of that meat consumption. And if it makes you feel better, then continue to do it. If it doesn't make you feel better, don't continue to do it. It's like my good friend Dr. Jade Tita says, there, the right diet is the one that works for you.
Right.
That is the only requirement. That is the only requirement for a diet. Who cares if it's low carb, low fat, high protein, ketogenic? The only requirement is that you get positive benefits from it. Weight loss, improvements in weight loss, improvements in energy, and improvements in health. All three of those need to be met.
Exactly. Perfect. And you're always going to be able to find evidence to support whatever it is you're seeking out. So try to keep that in the back of your mind when you're watching these things. But you're exactly right. And that's, you simplified what I said. You totally just said, you know what? 10 minutes later, I will be watching something and I'm like screaming from the rooftops. All we should be eating is vegetables. That's exactly right. And that's exactly what they're meant to do. So cut your friend a little slack.
Yeah. And think in terms of golden nuggets, right? Like we're always saying, find the golden nuggets. There is a golden nugget in every single documentary out there. What's that one? The one with the eating fast food?
And the impact? Yes. Supersize or whatever.
Supersize me?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The golden nugget there is don't eat so much fast food.
Right. Don't supersize.
Yeah.
The end. Okay. So this is our final question of the day. It's from a woman actually who messaged me back again today saying that we could use her name. Her name is Babs. And it says, hi, I have found that exercise has never really helped when losing weight. At one stage in my life, I was cycling about 12 miles a day, roughly 19.3 kilometers per day, 5 days a week, plus going to the gym in the evenings. I watched every calorie and made sure that I had an appropriate deficit, and yet the lowest I could get was about 147 pounds. Eventually, I decided to give it another go and focused on my eating. So she had taken a break and come back. This time, I have dropped down and maintained between 131 to 137 pounds, depending on how much willpower I have, all without exercise, even taking into account going to the gym in the evenings. I watched every calorie and made sure I had an appropriate deficit. I just totally went backwards. Eventually, I decided
to give it another go. Muscle mass.
Yes.
How is this possible?
How could I lose less with exercise? And this is a great question. I know you're chomping at the bit to answer this one, right?
She has fallen victim to the compensatory engine that we talk about.
Ah, yes. And, I've used that word every single day this week, just so you know.
TM.
So the compensatory engine, yes.
Compensatory engine. So the compensatory engine is that, and I think did we talk about this in the last podcast?
We did. Okay. Yeah, we sure did. So, but it's important enough to bring up again.
Well, just in a couple of lines, it goes like this. When you exercise a lot, if you have a big calorie deficit, your body responds by forcing you to either burn fewer calories during your off time or to eat more calories without you really thinking about it. So you eat a few more chips here. You have a little bit more craving there. You might get a little bit more of the condiments than you usually do. Eventually, if you burn 600 calories using aggressive cycling, in her case, she's gaining it all back either through compensatory slothfulness, where you feel mm-hmm. – where you fidget less, you move less, you have less of a tendency to get up and move spontaneously, or through the consumption of secret calories, where your body just kind of sneaks some in during meals that you normally wouldn't eat, but you now eat because your body is compelling you to do so. So that's why that happens. And what she's experienced is something that we've seen in the research over and over and over again. Standard classic cardio exercise, burning calories in that way, ultimately doesn't work any better than simply eating less, eating fewer calories, and mm-hmm. And not necessarily incorporating any more exercise into the mix. That's right. When we're talking about weight loss specifically. What's your take?
Well, that is my take on it, and it's exactly the same as yours. But what I would like to ask her, which I have not yet asked, but what does her body look like in her eyes? Because 137 10 years ago for me would look way different than 137 would look on me today. So it's also about shaping your body and the type of exercise you are doing. If you're looking to change the shape of that 137, it might be worth adding in a different type of exercise, you know, definitely some sort of resistance training to help change the shape of your body if that's something that you want to do. You might end up gaining a little bit of weight, but you can also really dial in on your nutrition and stick right around that 137 pounds or 131 to 137 pounds and really like the way your body looks. You can really tone up by doing something like that. So it doesn't come down to just the number on the scale. I know that you're proud and comfortable of that weight, and that's absolutely fantastic. That's going to be a great set point for you. But if you are hoping to change the appearance of your body, you know, the shape of your body, then that's when you would want to add in some type of resistance training.
Right. In the previous podcast, we talked about one of the commandments being thou shalt focus on type 2 muscle fibers. And
yes,
in this case, I think she would be a really good candidate to implement a really good short but intense resistance training program, along with some short bouts of high intensity interval training. And by the way, just because exercise doesn't necessarily, in her case, result in added weight loss, doesn't necessarily mean it's not beneficial for her body. And we've talked
Absolutely.
About this already. So, you know, if you're cycling and you hate it, that's bad for your body and your mind.
Right.
Going back to Sophie's example, where she's playing, you know, netball and touch football, she mm-hmm. may enjoy that greatly. And therefore, it's apples and oranges in this situation. What right. are the messages? Think in terms, and we talked about this with the core guiding principles. What are the messages that we're sending through the activity that we are doing? Think like that. If the message is pleasure, if the message is enjoyment, that is even if you're burning the same amount of calories as somebody else who's cycling and hates it, mm-hmm. the results are going to be totally different.
Exactly. And that is a golden nugget from today's podcast. That was a great answer, Ray. Right. Awesome podcast today. Yeah. I love that.
High five.
High five. Virtual high five. Awesome. Thank you so much for listening, guys. If you are interested in getting involved in our Cut the Fat Coaching Club, right, they need to go to cutthefatpodcast.com, correct?
Cutthefatpodcast.com, or you can go to cutthefatcoachingclub.com. You can go there and just put your email address in there, and we'll alert you when it's open. And, you know, these types of questions, you know, we do it on the podcast here, you can get answers right away through the members area. You know, we have a private Facebook page where you can post your questions in there, and you and I are going there and answer those questions. Plus, we have lots of online courses within there that probably will get to a lot of these types of questions along the way as you're kind of learning as you're doing, right?
Right. And these courses are a lot of fun to watch. There's so much information available. If you guys are stuck, even if you're not stuck, if you're just looking to develop a good foundation for a healthy lifestyle, Cut the Fat Coaching Club is where it's at.
Right. Now, we're not, you should know that we're not about the 10 pounds in 10 days. That's not the type of approach that you and I take. We're not about, you know, doing cleanses per se and things like that. Right. What we're about is really shifting our lifestyle, shifting our life in general, and ascending who we are as people, making and building a fun, active life that's full of foods that we enjoy, of things that we enjoy doing, and of people we enjoy doing them with. So it's not just a eat this meal plan kind of thing. It's the kind
right.
of thing where we're trying to teach you to fish and do it in a way that your brain does not resist that change.
And that's the lasting type of weight loss.
That's right.
Yeah, building a healthy lifestyle.
But you got to awesome. Be involved in that. You got to be involved in that process. It's I wish we could get there and we could reach through the screen and you know, move your little legs for you. But that's just not how it works. You know, you've got to really commit to the process.
Right. Awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to people on board here shortly when we open it back up. And you guys all have a fantastic day. Thank you so much for listening.
All right. Cheers. Bye.
Bye.